Start today, but I already woke up, so I guess the seminar's over. Thank you very much. Well, I'd like to start with namaste. And just explain a little bit what that's about, because a lot of people don't really know what namaste means or why they do it. And so I actually said that this morning to my wife when she asked me if I was ever going to get up, and I said, namaste in bed. And I actually worked on that for almost 2 weeks, so I'm glad I got a little chuckle. And so namaste, it's a Sanskrit greeting, and it establishes a connection between the person, one person and another, and it acknowledges that divine aspect in each. And nama, translated, means surrender, or also to bow. And te means you. So it's I bow to the divine or to the spirit or God in you. And the different parts of the bow is when it's called Anjali Mudra, or the prayer hand position. So you bring your hands in front of your heart, fingers up, palms facing each other. And what that does is that, and you bow, you bring your head below where your heart is, so you acknowledge the, let's just say, superiority of the heart over the head. And so when you bring your hands together, your left brain and your right hand and your right brain and your left hand come together in a state of balance. And in Ayurvedic principles, the fingers relate to the five elements. So you've got earth, water, fire, and air, and then ether. And so you bring a negative charge and a positive charge together in a state of balance at your heart. Okay? And so I'm going to be using my notes here a lot, because I wrote a lot and I want to make sure I remembered these things. So I'm going to start off with a quote. And it's from an author. Her name is Rasha. And I've got a book here of hers, and she gave it to us last week to give to somebody here today. So we're going to have, the way we're going to do it is we're going to have everybody just kind of write a number. I've already got the number pre-chosen. And write a number, and then after, if you're interested, just come and show me, and we'll see who gets closest. And if it's tie, then we'll do a number off. So this quote is from Rosh's book, Oneness. This has been available since 2004, and I got it in a Barnes & Noble in 2004. And to me, it's my favorite book, and it's almost like a Bible, because I've read over this thing four times or more, and Carolyn will attest that it's dog-eared, it's ratty. So she gave me a new copy, Rasha did, and it's highlighted like crazy. But this is a great book. If anybody's really interested in advancing some of the things they think they know, this will help a lot. And so that's going to be at the end. So the quote that I wanted to say from that, and I've got a lot of quotes, I've got a lot of notes here. And so the quote is, you stand at the threshold of a grand adventure. The extent to which you are able to experience the fullness of that journey is determined by the extent to which you are able to let go of the scenarios that no longer serve you. And that's, like I said, from her book, Oneness. Now, anybody, I got a great introduction. Thank you very much. For me, I realized very early, at age 18, when I was in the Navy, that things are not really as they appear. I think that Randy mentioned that I worked at NSA. Most of you have heard of NSA. Well, I learned right away that some of the things that we're told don't always match up with what's reality. And that information, a lot of times, is spread to get reactions and beliefs started. So I got awoken to that really early. It took me a few years to realize what was really going on. And that was after I got out of the Navy and so away from NSA. Although it was a great learning for me, it really kind of set the theme for my life that things are really not what you think they are or what you're told they are. And so I really had an interest in science to start. That was really what I had chosen. That's why I went into meteorology. But as I began my wake up, and that was really right after the Navy and when I was in undergraduate school, and started working as a meteorologist, I really started to move beyond the scientific explanation and into more of a metaphysical or quantum physics aspect, and just started doing a lot of reading on that. And so I incorporated that really into my lifestyle, and it really didn't go over well with a lot of the scientific people that I was around, because this was back in mid-80s, and so it's been a while. And so I just wanted to share with you a quote from Niels Bohr. He says that everything we call real is made of things that cannot be regarded as real. And most of you have heard that the world, the reality that we live in, is like 99.9% empty space. And so to put a lot of value in the material world, maybe not the best use of our time and energy. And so I got more familiar there with, I went from the familiar, let's say, and went into the familiar, the known, and I started moving into what's unfamiliar, what's unknown, and started to make great strides. And like I said, I kind of woke up. I've woken up several times in different ways, and so I'm going to explain a few of those things today that I've gotten not only from my meditation, my contemplation, my personal inquiry, but from some of the people that I've talked with. Rosh's book is excellent for really opening that up to anybody. Also, meditation in any form is good. I was going to do a meditation today, but I've got way too much to talk about, so we're not even going to get into that. So I'm going to talk first about Om, then I'm going to go into the four levels of consciousness, then the core misunderstanding that leads to illusion, and that's according to Adyashanti, another author and spiritual teacher. He's out in the Bay Area. Excellent information and meditation from him, if you're ever interested. He does have a seminar online that he does about every 2 or 3 weeks, and it's usually on a Wednesday evening at 9 Eastern time. Very good, and it's free, and they don't keep those. If you ever do want to listen to them later, you have to make a copy yourself, because they'll charge you if you don't catch the live version. But very worthwhile. And so let's talk about Om. And so I was hiding this from people so they wouldn't know and start developing any beliefs around it. But I did a lot of meditation. I've done several kinds of meditation. And Om was not always at the beginning or at the forefront of those meditations. But as I grew, I started to realize how powerful Om is. Om is called the seed sound, or the first word, or the word of God, or the sacred syllable. Okay, and that's usually written O-M or A-U-M, depending on if you use it phonetically or not. And so, Om, this is Om right here, and it has it shows physical manifestation in the world of duality that we're living in, that we're occupying right now, but it has its roots in the unmanifest or unknown. And so that's what this symbol shows. As you can see, it's a 3. And so that shows right within itself. I'm going to talk about the 4 levels of consciousness in just a bit, but it shows the 4 levels of consciousness right here in this whole symbol. And this 3 is really key. The 3 levels of consciousness in duality happen to be the waking state, which we're all in right now, the sleeping state, and the dreaming state. And so that's represented right here in this symbol of 3. And I don't know how they even determined that symbol, but it works perfectly. And so the way I see it, and I've read other different things about Om, they put the waking, sleeping, and dreaming states in different parts of the symbol. I like to put the waking state here as the higher state. And so I see that as this upper level, and this lower level is the sleeping state, and the level that's in between is the dreaming state. Now, the waking state is characterized by a creative process. And the sleeping state is more of a destructive. As you're waking up every day, you're kind of recreating yourself. You're being reborn every day. And so that's the creative aspect. And that shows up in Om also as the three gunas. There is a sattva guna, if anybody is familiar with Ayurvedic principles. And the lower sleeping state is reminiscent of destruction, if you will, destroying the old. And so when you go to sleep, you kind of you let go of your body. It disappears. And so that is the sleeping state. And then the energy that moves between those two, it's an energetic balancing, and that is right there. And that is the dreaming state. And as you can see, this little curlicue, this circle, coming off, and it's mainly coming off of the dreaming state. And the reason that that's there, that's symbolic of the cycles of death, birth, and life, birth, birth, life, and death. And so it's also called samsara in Sanskrit, which means cycles. Now, when you're in these three states of duality, you are on this cycle, this wheel of birth, life, and then death. And it just repeats over and over in many ways every day. Also in the physical, it shows up. And so that cycle is fine. It's great. At some point, you decide that you maybe don't want to continue on these cycles. And so Om symbol shows you very easily what is beyond these cycles. If you want to stay in duality, that's fine. You're going to get a lot of learning. You're going to wake up at very many different levels, and we're going to talk about some of those different levels. But this is the other part of the Om symbol. And Kay, you've already got the necklace, so you don't need to see this. But this line here represents the veil. Okay, that is the illusion that keeps you trapped, if you will, in this duality or in this state of duality, it was D-O-ality, I like to look at it, because you're always wanting to do things instead of be. Now this illusion, when you can begin to see past the illusion as you wake up, you start to realize that it's very simple. And it's just this one dot. I happen to make it a heart, only because you really start getting into your heart when you see past the illusion. And that is called the Bindu point, if you will, and that is the seed point for creation. It's in the absolute realm. It's not in the dualistic realm here. And so as that illusion disappears, you start to see truth. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that now. Everybody, any questions? Everybody looked kind of mesmerized. Are y'all dreaming now? Maybe I am. Okay, so it's this original seed sound. And Om transcends the past, the present, and the future and brings you into the now. And it's usually said before and after meditation. Doesn't have to be. I don't do it all the time, but it's a vibratory connection is what it does. It connects you to that absolute realm and kind of helps you to remove yourself from focusing on duality. And so that samsara, which is that cycle, that circle, that it's a lot like being on that hamster's wheel. You know, hamster's continually running around, but what's he doing? At some point, he or she makes that decision to stop running on that wheel. And that's very important. You just say, no more, I'm ready to move higher, okay? And what's really important there is that you follow through on saying that I really don't want to continue into that samsara, because that's associated with suffering. It's associated with drama. And those cycles continue to create that. Even though you have ups and downs from that, it still will lead to suffering because you're not connected to that higher aspect of yourself. And suffering can become almost addictive. And you probably know people, everybody probably knows somebody that's really addicted to drama and suffering and telling you all the things that are going on bad in their life. Well, they're stuck. They're like that hamster that just keeps running on the wheel. And so at some point, you don't have to do it, but at some point they will realize that they have to stop it themselves. They stop that wheel from turning by looking past the illusions that they've probably self-created. And so now the four levels of consciousness, as I said, waking is that top one, and that is, to me, that being born again aspect where the body reappears, and that's a creative process, okay? That's what a lot of artists use. They use that energy. The sleeping is on the lower part, and like I said, that is that ritual death that goes on every night when you go to sleep, and the body disappears. It's destroyed, if you will. And that mind-body during sleep does, that's when it starts to cleanse itself of any toxins or any extraneous memory. And like I said, it's destructive. And so it will destroy some of those memories that may have become a problem during the day that are no longer necessary. It'll wipe them out. And so the other state is the middle one. The important one is the dreaming state. That's the energy balancing process between the two poles of upward and downward motion, if you will. When you do clear those charged experiences at night when you're dreaming, that clearance really does allow the body to not only cleanse its memory, but it cleanses its DNA as well, if you allow it. Now, it's not a one-time process. It's something that you have to continually do. You have to make a commitment to that cleansing. And the way you do it is you start to see past the relative duality that you're living in. And so now, this upper part, that is the fourth state of consciousness. And some people probably know what that is. It's Sanskrit. It's called Turiya, if any of you have heard that. That's simply translated as the fourth state, okay? And so there's three dualistic relative states and then the Turiya state. And that is the unified, like Richard said, that is that unified field of pure consciousness and probability or possibility. It's in potential. It's all right there in that absolute or that realm of God or spirit, whatever you want to call it, consciousness, another one. And when you're in that Turiya state, you usually get to that through meditation if you allow it to happen and work through you. And when you're in that state, it's experienced as like a being. You're no longer caught in that world of duality. You're in what I call the beality, okay? And I call it the reality, or the beality reality, because that's really what it's about is that being state and not always feeling that you have to do something to grow. Things are going to happen to you no matter what you do. They're going to come up. You can't force them to come up. You can't try to do more to make them come up and speed them up. They're going to happen. And so it's about relaxing and being. And that's really what meditation allows you to do. It allows you to calm down and to be able to see a little further. And so now I want to talk about the core misperception or the core misunderstanding that leads to illusion. And this I got from Ajahshanti. And like I said, he's a spiritual teacher out in San Francisco Bay Area. And what he says about that is it's that misunderstanding that some other experience other than the one I am having right now will be an indication of truth or unity. And so that's important to realize that we try to make judgments based on the experiences we're having, but that's not always the best thing to do. If you can let go of the judgment through letting go of some of the beliefs that you've developed, you can get to that higher or that more absolute state. And I've been there. I know a lot of other people have been there. Not been there fully, but that's still what I strive to do. Now, about that misperception, that it really that aspect of our being really isn't content until it has freed itself and liberated itself from the downward pull of duality, because it'll continue to pull on you. I mean, with money, with fame, with any number of things, drugs, it'll try to pull you back down. And so it's because, and when you realize that those experiences are there for a reason, but you shouldn't judge them and just allow, really, that's really probably the essence of all meditation, is to allow everything to be as it is. Not try to do, but to try to be and let energy move through the world the way it's going to. It's going to move. It's just you got to jump off that wheel, that continuous wheel, to allow it to move. And not the easiest thing, but I find that meditation, spiritual inquiry, is a very good way of doing that. Like I said, I was going to do it today, but I'm going to go too long if we do that. So that's not going to happen. That truth of unity that's in your experience, a lot of people continue to look at it as they're going to always look for a different experience. Okay, that's kind of a trap. You know, you've got this experience going on, but oh no, I want the experience my neighbor has. I want what he has. That's a trap. And so you're always kind of looking for that right experience, and that's part of the trap. You're kind of looking for something that maybe it's not ready for you to see that yet. And so that's where you let go and you learn that being, or that reality. And so I want to read a quote from Ajahn Chah, and I've got one of his books. And I've got this is a great CD for guided meditation. Now, this guided meditation, I was going to play one for you today, but it takes too long. It is, it's not the flowery kind of guided meditation where you go through streams and waterfalls and bird singing kind of thing. These guided meditations take you within to that state of awareness, where awareness, when you reach to that state in its pure form, it starts to cleanse the mind. It starts to cleanse the body. And so it's about getting into that pure awareness state. And he does a really good job in here of explaining that. He also got some books. I've read all of his books. They're excellent. And there's probably, what, 5 or 6 of them, and I read them in the past year because I just was astounded by some of the things that he says. And so in one of his books that's named My Secret is Silence, Ajahn Chah says, "You cannot think about reality, nor can you imagine it with images in your head. When you are caught within a dream, the only way to be free is to wake up from that dream." And so that's this samsara, this continuous wheel. When you're caught in that, the only way is to wake up or see beyond the illusion or the veil that's not anything major, but it does kind of hide that spirit or that God aspect within you. And from what I found, that aspect is love, and it's always there. And it's not the kind of conditional love that we've come to assume, or the feeling of love. It's more of a underlying essence of all things, even consciousness. And so the illusion also is known as Maya. If you all have heard that. That illusion is mistaking our relative, dualistic, temporary perspective of reality and thinking and mistaking it for the absolute. Because it can be easy to do. As you move higher, there are certain traps along the way. And if you don't stay focused on that ultimate truth, then you could easily go on a little side path. It takes a little longer. You're eventually going to find your way back, and you will, if you continue to look into the self. And that's what namaste does. When you do that and you bow, you also close your eyes, which I forgot to mention, and that allows you to see within, okay? That brings your attention in. And so that's very important. That's what we're all really here to learn, kind of, is to be able to see within and know who and what we are. And within illusion, everything seems to be real. So if this here seems to be real, guess where we're probably at? We're probably in an illusory state of some kind that we've created. Now, some of it's more real than other things, and we all experience our illusions differently than everybody else. And so that's why it's important not to trust what somebody else is doing or how they're meditating or how they're praying, but to do it for yourself and do it on your own, because that's what's really important. So now I'm going to talk pretty much about the spiritual journey and the levels, the different levels of waking up. And there's three real ones that I found. And I'm going to use a metaphor for a rocket ship to kind of explain that, or what I'm going to call is your spiritual vehicle or your capsule. And so I kind of took this metaphor from the Apollo missions, if anybody remembers that, back in the 60s and 70s. It was a three-stage rocket that shot the capsule up and out of the pull of gravity. And so I'm going to use that metaphor to kind of explain those stages that we all go through. And so the first stage, the rocket's not even on the pad yet, okay? It's even before the blast-off period. That's really the important part, because that is the hardest part, is getting started on that path of awakening. And that blast-off can be delayed by resistance and attachment to the known or to what's familiar to you. It's very important to break free of inertia. And if anybody doesn't know what inertia is, it's that property of matter that continues in its existing state of rest or moving along a straight line, not moving up or down, but just trying to, I'm just going to let things happen, kind of. I'm not ever going to put any activity into anything. And that's very important. You can't get caught in that trap. And so that's what will initially stop you from even going further, because you don't want to do anything. You know, I'm happy. And that's great if you are happy. You don't want to ever do things that make you unhappy. So if that makes you happy, continue along that. But that's very important. I had that blast-off period when I was in the Navy, really, and I decided that, yeah, something's just not working for me. Even though I was young, I saw that. And it was really helped by my mom's death. I was in the Navy, I was 21 at the time, and she passed. And it was kind of boosted me into a different level. Now, as that rocket ship blasts off, it's going to keep moving against the force of gravity. Gravity, very powerful. It's going to want to pull that rocket ship back down if it doesn't have the energy or fuel to continue to move upward. Okay? And so that stage one is really about healing the body. Okay? And that's waking up and letting go at your physical level of reality, not always assuming that everything physical is all there is. That's really stage one. And most of you are here at least at that stage, if not much higher. And so you might identify with some of these stages. And you probably had little inklings of some of these little characteristics of some of the stages. I had that stage one drop away when I got divorced. And that was right after undergraduate school. I was working shifts as a meteorologist, and it became very hard on my body because we constantly rotated. And I go, I've got to do something. Because I saw a lot of the other meteorologists that had been doing it 15, 20 years. They looked horrible. And a lot of them had physical problems that I just couldn't even believe. And so I go, I can't be like that. I'm going to do something about trying to build my body up. And so stage one is characterized by trying to build your body up, get it stronger, so that it isn't, so it doesn't succumb to those outside forces as much. And that can mean changing your diet, changing your activity level, starting to meditate, whatever it is. It's about just coming into a healthier physical state. And it's really important to break that inertia, is just to have the willingness to let go of your conditioned responses and your learned behaviors. They're all familiar, but they're holding you back. They're holding you down in the dualistic levels. And so that's very important to do that. When that stage one drops away, that causes that rocket to be lighter. That rocket will now, still has fuel, it's going to move faster. And the downward pull of gravity gets less, so it starts to speed up as you go higher. And as that stage one drops away, the body starts to wake up, okay? And it's waking up in the underlying field of perception. Perception is another way of saying consciousness. It's a more dense level of consciousness, but that perception is associated with your nervous system, associated with your five senses. And if you can learn to focus, because they all work together as like a symphony, all your senses, but in order to really get the most out of one, you kind of need to focus on it. Like if you're eating, you can't be watching TV and talking and doing and trying to read or look at your cell phone. You have to concentrate. That helps you to strengthen those senses and eventually help your body to start healing, because that's the only way your body's going to heal is if your nervous system is working at its most efficient level. Okay? And so try to make a habit of really focusing your senses, because it's very important to get that stage one for that extra weight to drop off so you can move higher. So I've got a lot of notes, so just bear with me here, see where I'm at. Okay, those senses or those forms of consciousness, that denser forms of consciousness, they don't really need thinking to take place. They are really independent of thinking. However, they can stir up what's called Velcro thoughts, thoughts that are kind of been around or other people's thoughts, and they will attach based on your sense. So if you've, say you've been in a car accident and it made a really loud noise, the windshield broke, you were in pain, any of those same senses that are stirred again can go back into memory if you don't clear that out of your memory. And like I said earlier, awareness really cleanses memory. So if you can get into that state of awareness, which is a little higher than perception, then you're going to be able to cleanse some of those factors that are causing any smell that might smell like when you were involved in the accident, you might smell the gas. And if you smell the gas like that again, you're going to go back and you're going to go into that contracted state. And so it's important to just start to clear yourself. Nobody can do it for you. No practitioner can do it for you. No drug can do it for you. Meditation awareness is really important for that. And so when the nervous system, through its senses, encounters any resistance, it will start to break down into its electromagnetic components. And if anybody's seen my seminars on Friday, I've done them, they've gone a little long, and you're probably very lucky that you're here because I don't have any PowerPoint slides this time. Anybody that was there, both of those, realize I use a lot of PowerPoint slides because that's kind of more of the scientific aspect that I've developed. So this is my first time not really using any slides other than this board. And so that healing aspect in stage one, dropping that stage, is really limited by your habits and your past experiences. If your past experiences are really great, you're going to try to hold on. It's great if you allow those experiences to occur but not attach to them, because it may be the greatest moment of your life. However, that will eventually hold you back from moving higher. Okay, it'll keep that energy down at lower levels. And so when those habits occur, the body kind of falls asleep and the perception doesn't work. In your sleep state, you can't perceive. Okay, you can't see, you can't smell. The body falls asleep and perception just kind of disappears. And so now we're going to move to stage two. When stage two drops away of your spiritual vehicle or your rocket, that leads to a state of healing the mind. That's going to be a characteristic aspect at stage two. And that is waking up and letting go of the mental level of reality, the mind's dream or the mind's illusion. And those are most easily seen in the beliefs that you hold and the beliefs that you energize on a continuous basis. And so it's important to really question your beliefs. You're going to find that in stage two, as you do move higher, that rocket gets lighter. And so that's going to make your vehicle move faster. And so the cycles that you're now trapped in start to move faster. Okay? You're going to probably, most of you probably noticed how the world seems to be speeding up. Well, that's because you're actually speeding up and you're starting to drop a lot of the baggage, a lot of the rocket that was kind of holding you down. And so if you allow that rocket to continue to hold down, gravity will eventually take over and pull that rocket back down. So it's important to keep that energy state high, and you're going to go through that healing body aspect first, because if you don't heal the body, you're not going to have the energy to be able to move higher and start to clear the mind of some of its excesses and this repetitious thoughts that sometimes are borrowed from others that lead to beliefs, okay? And trust me, at NSA, that's where I first learned about belief and how they manipulate belief. And this is back in the 70s. And so it's much more hidden now. They've gotten really good at getting everybody to believe anything that they put out there. And so it's always really, it's about questioning what you hear, what you're told, what you read. It's really going into that heart space where you're connected to spirit and God and find out for yourself what's real and not just borrow those thoughts from others, because that is another trap. And, you know, some people, when I taught meditation, and I taught meditation a couple of different times, people are proud of their beliefs. And when I first started writing, and I still haven't done it, I still haven't finished a book, but I'm writing about beliefs. Like I said, people have a real pride in their beliefs. They don't realize that those beliefs, whether they're positive or negative, will hold you back from experiencing truth. You'll still be caught under that veil because it's belief. You've got to experience the things for yourself. Okay, you can't just accept what you're told. Okay, even what I'm saying. I don't want you to believe anything what I'm saying. I don't even believe it. And so that's an important state, is when you can look at things and not automatically believe them, but look into yourself or research, find out for yourself what's true. And so I'm going to talk now in that stage two is when the mind starts to wake up, and the mind is based in awareness. That's a less dense level than perception, okay? The five senses and perception are contained within awareness, but that's just a small part. If anybody has seen my last seminar, I talked a little bit about this. And I'm just going to draw this up here really quick just to kind of show you visual. Okay, you might want to come around if you're interested. But I'm just going to draw this as, let's just say that's the soul or the level of consciousness. And then this circle, I'm going to come up about right there. That's the state of awareness. Consciousness is this red. I'm just going to put a C. This is awareness. And awareness is contained within consciousness. Okay, it's a little denser level. And it's associated with the mind and the mental level. And then perception, the densest of all aspects of consciousness, and it's perception. Like I said, that's the five senses. So awareness, you're going to be aware of your perception. If you're in perception, your most likely not going to be able to see other than that until you start to drop away some of those habits. And so if you're looking from the level of perception, if you look up into the infinite, you're going to, if you follow it up, you're only going to see a little bit of what's out there, okay? You're looking kind of with blinders on. And so that's what perception does. It helps you. You can see things. And as your perception gets more refined, you're going to see more. But it's not the end. So now we're going to look at the less dense level. And this is stage two of awakening. You're going to be focused on this blue or awareness. And now you see more. And you also can see perception. Okay? You're totally connected still to your body. However, now you're starting to get into that level of the mind and clearing it. And now you can see into that infinite field. You can see more of the truth. Now, when you get into stage three, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, you can see the infinite without the blinders on. And I've done that for a small amount of time. I haven't done it, otherwise I probably still wouldn't be here. But it's important to get into that self-reflective and state of inquiry and find out where you might have issues or beliefs that need to be updated or let go of. Letting go and letting go of attachment and resistance to life kind of is also what keeps those stages intact. And so it's about letting go and not resisting what's there. And so awareness is not really focused, okay? It's kind of like an open space, and it's like the open sky. That's really what the sense of awareness is in the body. Like I said, it's not focused. However, the focused part, when you do focus your awareness, that's called attention. And that is not on anything other than your current experience. So if you're giving attention to something, you're in your current experience of now, and that focus will help you to see parts of awareness. And you just have to put your mind on the parts, especially the parts that are blocked. Now, intention is something different than that. Most of you have heard of intention. Intention to me is attention, or the focused awareness, that's applied toward a goal. So there's differences in all these. They're semantic. However, I think it's important to understand that intention really focuses you toward a goal. So if you put your intention on dropping some of your baggage and beliefs and moving higher, that will start to happen. Your spirit, your soul, will start to show you, if you ask, what you need to do to clear, and so you can move higher and escape that pull of gravity or that pull of duality, which we've gotten used to. Okay, so like I said earlier, awareness cleanses the mind. In a way, if anybody's had those 8-track tapes and they've degaussed them, has anybody ever done that? It's a lot. That awareness is like degaussing those emotional charges that are in the mind that lead to beliefs. Okay? And so if that's what awareness does. And that's where not only do you go in meditation, but if you can go to that state of awareness, when you're done with your meditation, if you just think about bringing that awareness out with you and seeing that expansive state, that will help. And I like to say beliefs are like clouds moving in the sky or moving in your awareness. They're out there. They're fun to watch. Sometimes they're going to be, those beliefs are heavy and overcast like today. And that's a pretty solid belief. But sometimes you're going to have those real fluffy little clouds and being able to see the blue sky. That blue sky is really awareness. And I think I even put awareness in blue, which that's excellent. And so, and like I said, that those beliefs limit you. And they particularly limit you in having future expectations of things occurring the same way again when that takes you out of the moment. And so, like I said, it's very important to let go of those beliefs and those future expectations because they're not going to happen the way you think they are or hope they are. that's where you have to get into that being state. Now, that is important as that stage two drops away. Now the rocket continues to move higher, but now it gets a little different, okay? When the stage two drops from your spiritual rocket, you're now going to start to move beyond the veil or the pull of gravity, if you will. You're not going to be pulled so much back down to the dualistic, although you're still connected to it. You won't be fascinated by it. You'll be able to see things more in a state of truth and your own state of truth in that connection. And so as stage three drops away, that's all the fuel you need. You don't really need any more fuel. When you can get past the pull of gravity, you're going to continue to go out into deep space and reconnect with that divine nature within yourself. And so I've done that. It's not a state that stays with me all the time, but it's something that I allow it to be whenever it occurs. And I've had some experiences that are quite interesting. If any of you have seen the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with Jim Carrey, there's some parts in there where his memory is cleansing, and that's really what you're doing when you're awareness. Your memory is starting to drop away, and the foundations of your reality or what you thought start to crumble. And that's not the easiest state to be in. Okay? I've seen that a little bit, and it can be a little scary, and you kind of want to grab back on to that previous stage that fell apart and allowed you to speed out into that higher reality. But I think it's very important that you don't attach to moving either further out or dropping back, but just allowing whatever is to be for you, allow it to be as it is and love it. And so I had my last experience in that stage three was when I was at a 7-day silent retreat in Rhinebeck, which is out your way in New York, with the Omega Institute. Ajahn Chah did a 7-day silent retreat. Both my wife and myself were there, and we had some experiences. I had gone 3 days in the past being silent, but 7 days was a lot. But it really allows you to get in touch with yourself, because that's all there is. When you realize that that's really all there is and there is nothing else than your own spiritual vehicle that is moving and dropping the load that it's carried for so long, then you're going to move, continue to move higher and closer to whatever goal you have or intention that you've set. And so virtual reality can start to make sense. I had my first experience of virtual reality when I was teaching some seminars back in Raleigh, North Carolina area, and I had some, yes? Yes?
I just wanted to remind you there's a time limit here, so we don't want to...
I'm about done.
We got the food burning in the oven across
the... Oh, did you need some... Did you want to go get it?
Okay,
I'm about done.
Thank you.
And so, I know I was talking about something.
Raleigh.
Oh, Raleigh. Okay, yeah, I had been given a seminar. I had some agents of another speaker that were at my seminar, and they were intrigued. They invited me to come to another one of the speakers' seminars in Asheville at the time, and his name was Tom Campbell. I don't know if anybody's read his book, My Big Toe or My Big Theory of Everything. It's a 3-volume big book. But in that, he explains about virtual reality. And when I went to the seminar in 2009, I believe, I thought it was a bunch of crap. He was talking about it's almost like being in a game, or a computer game. And some of the things I've seen since tells me that Tom Campbell probably has some of it quite right in his explanation of it. So he's got some interesting information. So for waking up, at every level of reality, light is what wakes you up. Okay? and it stirs you, and it's always trying to get you to wake up and move higher. And sometimes it's easy to wake up, sometimes not so much, as for me this morning when I said namaste in bed. But now, the key is there's always alarm clocks built into every level of waking up. They kind of shock you out of that deeper state that maybe you get comfortable in. But those alarm clocks will go off. And one of the biggest alarm clocks that we all got to experience was 9/11. That shocked a lot of people out of their sleep and believing things that you're told. And so those alarm clocks, like I said, are built into every aspect of awakening. Don't look for them. They'll show up. Okay? And now there is also a tendency to fall back asleep at every level or at every stage of waking up. And so that's where you have to continue to build on the other stages, having that energy available, letting go of the beliefs, and allowing reality to be as it is. And that kind of elevates your state from awareness into that state of consciousness or spirit or God, whatever you want to call it. And what's important in that body stage is how you feel when you wake up. That tells how well you're detoxifying every night. And it also tells you how the amount and the efficiency of the healing you're doing. So if you don't feel great in the morning, you know your body probably needs a little work, needs to get rid of some of those toxins, both mental and physical. Negative thoughts very much lead to toxins in the body. So that's important to let go of the mind. Now, waking up in the soul, we're almost done. Waking up in the soul, yes, the soul is asleep, if you will. What the soul has happened is it grabs that all-encompassing purity of consciousness and just closes off a little piece of it, okay, and has it with you. But you're always connected to that God aspect through your soul. But that soul is really asleep, if you will. And when you get into that higher stage, your soul is going to wake up back into spirit in a more pure sense. Now, it can fall back to sleep. Like I said, there's many times that things are going to, you're going to kind of fall back a little bit when you're moving up. But allow it to be as it is. And you'll start to know your real innate connection to the source at that time, because you are that. And when you can let go of the body, the mind, all of it, you're there. And I think, what really is keeping us from waking up in dreaming, what causes that and dream ourselves back into existence every day, it's something that pushes us to wake up, and that something is gnawing us to see beyond what we've accepted and to see real truth with a capital T. And that's what we're all here to discover. It's what each of us is here to discover, the truth in us and in our reality. And I want to finish with a quote from Carl Jung. And he says, "Your vision will become clear only when you look into your heart. Who looks outside dreams. Who looks inside awakens."